Okay, so I thought just to lay the groundwork in terms of our discussions today, I would just sort of set this out. So forgive me if this is very familiar to you, but I thought it's just helpful to make sure, first of all, from a terminology point of view, as well as in terms of how the curriculum has developed, to make sure that everybody is on the same page. And if you think I'm not reflecting this correctly, because there's many moving parts, then please interrupt me as well. But I thought that from the point of view of what we're talking about today, we have this kind of progression of things that we deal with, and it's not always a progression in the education space in the actuarial society. And some of this is particularly unique to how we deal with it when we compare ourselves with other professional bodies. So the way I'm thinking of it is that the curriculum is kind of the outline of the subjects that we're covering, right? So it's more high level, whereas the syllabus is then per subject we get into what the detail of what we're actually covering in each subject. And perhaps just for today's discussion, because sometimes we use those words interchangeably, it might be helpful if we're thinking of it from that perspective. And then alongside that goes the tuition, which is when we are providing some kind of support in terms of students engaging with the syllabus, and that tuition can obviously be in the form of face-to-face tuition, but it also includes things like the notes and other support mechanisms. And then we have the assessment, which is the examination process, the way in which we conduct the exams, as well as the structure and the nature of the exams themselves. And all of that leads to our qualification or designation structure, which is what I'm going to talk a little bit more about today as well. So is everyone comfortable with that as kind of like the terminology that we will be referring to today? I get particularly concerned about the curriculum and the syllabus thing, you know, that we talk at the right level when we're talking curriculum versus syllabus. So the curriculum is kind of, you know, that the order of the subjects. So the, you know, if we have
mathematics.
Yes, and then the syllabus is kind of the content of that subject. Does that make sense? Excellent. Okay, so hopefully from our teaching approach, we're moving away from that traditional approach. I almost wanted to try and find a picture of Prof. Boyd, because that's my memory of him, a whole board full of formulae that I was several steps behind on. But I guess that's our challenge, is that our traditional approach of conveying and getting students to grasp and in themselves be able to then convey technical concepts, that we need to be thinking of new ways to do that. And that's why I guess our starting point in terms of the presentations will be Dale's presentation addressing that. So I took these slides from the education sessionals that we had at the beginning of last year and just update them a bit. And this, I guess, is another terminology thing in terms of our qualifications versus our designations. So, I mean, we talk about the qualification being following the completion of our exam process. So once you've worked through the curriculum and addressed all the syllabus objectives and passed all the assessments, then you reach the point of having a qualification. And because we have registered designations, we're actually able to use that as a designation. So it goes, the point about a designation is that it goes beyond just the fact that you've completed something and now you move on. That you, with a designation, it suggests that you're continuing to participate in terms of ongoing learning. So that's where the continuing professional development comes, as opposed to, you know, once you have your BSc, you have that qualification, you frame it, and it's on the wall. Obviously, you have a little bit of affiliation back to your alumni or not. I mean, maybe you feel quite sad about your university. I don't, Steve, I don't. But whereas with your FASA, then you have an ongoing relationship with that professional body. So in terms of our designations, our ladder now includes the TASA, which we have formally registered. Am I right, Conrad, that it's a formally registered designation? So so we have the TASA and the CIRA and the AMASA and the FASA. as all of our formally registered designations. And so it is becoming a little bit of an alphabet soup, and I guess that's part of what I wanted to kind of lay out in this discussion as to how much wider should we be casting that net, because we still have on the radar is some of the other designations that are floating around internationally. So at the moment we have the new curriculum. So here we have the subjects leading to our various designations, and one of the strategies that we have been adopting in the Actuarial Society is to try and promote the AMASA or the associate level designation, and that people see that as a potential endpoint. So. So those are the kind of initiatives of saying, for example, that it's compulsory for people to get the AMASA at the point at which they are eligible for it. So we don't have the situation that there's a kind of connotation associated with it that you've kind of opted out of the path towards the FASA, that it actually becomes part of that path. And I think there's been fairly widespread support for that as an initiative. But earlier on, and this is where we've introduced the TASA designation, which kind of replaced that previous diploma in actuarial techniques, but it's got the normative skills part of it. And then alongside that, we have this issue still floating around of the CAA internationally, and also whether we have a separate qualification in terms of the predictive analytics or some kind of data science qualification. So at this point, we have not progressed these, and it's interesting that actually I haven't heard much about the CAA at all in the last, I mean this year, in fact, that all the hype around that seems to have diminished. But I guess we need to think about whether it causes confusion. Start introducing these things, and I think the pressure has certainly, when I was thinking about putting this all together, my sense is that the pressure has gone off on those things, and that in fact we should be focusing our energy on making sure that people are understanding how the TASA, the AMASA, and the FASA fit in, rather than confusing things with those. But I guess we've got a few minutes to have just some high-level discussion around this kind of structure of our qualification framework and the designations that we issue as part of that. So any thoughts on that as a question? Do we have enough? Is it too much?
So for those that haven't heard my normal comment, I think we already have too many. I'd be surprised if many people around this table could actually distinguish properly between the four that we've got. And if we can't, how do we expect others to? I've never been a fan of the CAA. I mean, Clifford Friend was pushing it a lot in Berlin again, but I'm personally not a fan of it. And I just think that the titles are confusing. CAA, Chartered Actuarial Analyst, sounds much better than being a TASA or an AMASA. So it's around the understandability of the various qualifications, designations.
Thanks, Garajan. No, I agree. I mean, I think it is very confusing. Mike?
And just to follow up from what Garrett said there, I think the feelings of the CAA, I think, are fairly widely held, certainly around this table, and I certainly share them, but it hasn't gone that quiet, unfortunately, on the CAA on the global stage. So we have taken the decision that we'll go along with it from the point of view, because South Africa, I think, is the second biggest country with people having registered for those exams of outside, and think after the UK and possibly India, so third after the UK of countries having registered. So we have signed an agreement with them, and it's really from a point of view of wanting to know where the CAAs in South Africa are, and we can manage that.
Do we have a sense of who it is who's registering for that?
I haven't seen a recent listing, but I've certainly seen there are quite a lot of people in quite a few of the large companies around this neighborhood. There are quite a few consultancies, possibly more than insurers, but is that, and particularly now that the the SIA is on board with them, I think we're going to find that they're going to have a lot more money behind them than what they've had up until now. So I think it is one that is a genuine potential threat to the actuarial students, which is why we've come with the TASA designation, and that is one, as we've tried in recent communication to express, to make sure that it's understood that from an actuarial technical side, the TASA is a higher level qualification. The CIA is at a lower level, but you'd expect the CIA to have underwriting or accounting or IT skills with it as well, and the CIA is just sort of to help them work effectively with actuaries is the perspective. So, I mean, the CIA name, I agree with what Garrett said in terms of where it
I
is.
I wish we could go back and change that.
We
I wish
fought we had them on it when they first mentioned it in the IAA meetings in 2014, but they already then registered and entrenched it, and they haven't been open for discussion on that, so we've had to live with it. And that's why we've come with the TASA designation. It is, if CIA doesn't grow in footing, then TASA will probably never really be much. But if it does grow in footing, I think it's very important for the protection of our members to have that designation.
Steve, did you want to?
Thanks. So my view, I think, has been reiterated. I think that the CIA will damage our profession in the marketplace amongst those who don't know the difference between what a TASA is and what a CIA, because the natural assumption is that the CIA sounds far better. In fact, it sounds better than a fellow in some ways because of the strong brand strength around chartered with a chartered accountant. I was a huge fan of getting a qualification at the TASA level, but I do worry that our names mean more to actuaries in-house than they mean to the public, and I think we still need to pursue some way of changing those designations so that the broader public will recognize the difficulty and the work that went behind it, whereas at the moment that's missing. I've got lots of TASA still on my shelf in my office. From when I was a student, they were transactions of the Actuarial Society of South Africa. and that's part of the danger as well. I don't know what the answer is, but I think all of our designations, in a sense, remain in-house mystique definitions rather than broader public definitions. And I think if we are going to change anything, we need to find some way of having better, more publicly understood designations for our members. Not that we need more. I think there are too many, but better names.
Can I just clarify how you become a CAA? Just roughly. Like, what do you need? Is it the same exams or just less? Or?
No, it's different exams.
Okay, different exams at different level.
Through this global body that you
should speak in
the mic. Well, I gave it to Peter because he's going to speak next. It's a global body. It jumped in, yeah. It's a global body that is sort of a joint venture between now the SOA and the IFOA. It was the IFOA who started it originally, and now it's a joint venture, and they have the set of exams. And effectively what they're encouraging people to do is to kind of register for those exams, like they're an exam provider, almost like a university, and then they come to their local actuarial profession with their, now that they've passed the exams, and then we can award a designation which might include other skills or whatever. So that's...
So I think there are a couple of things that we need to note here. The first one is that the CAA is a reality that is out there. It's a trademark name. We can't do anything about it. What we have to make sure is that we create within our community in South Africa an understanding of what it is and why our designations are better. Now, if we think that we should come up with better names than we have, then I think council will be very happy to hear those suggestions. In council, there was a significant discussion around, we want to have something that stands out as higher than the CAA, and TASA was what we came up with because every other thing was just as bad, if not worse. So if anybody's got a better idea, that would be fantastic.
How about real chartered actuaries? Super
chartered, double chartered. So then the other thing to note is that the UK is effectively rebranding their associateship level exam as a chartered actuary. So I think that we just need to recognize that I think that's going to give them a huge headache with having a chartered actuarial analyst and a chartered actuary out there as their designations. I think they've created a rod for their own back that is a problem. They're determined to go ahead with it from what we picked up when we spoke with them in Berlin. Even though their membership had gotten pushback, they are actually, what they were telling us is they found that their membership, when they've spoken to them about the theory of what they're trying to do, actually then changed their mind about being against the chartered actuary role. And it's fundamentally what they're trying to do is they're trying to create the recognition of the associateship as effectively an equivalent entry-level thing to a chartered accountant or to a chartered lawyer, because they're unable to attract those people that they want into the profession. They're still going to stick with the fellow as effectively the specialist. But essentially all they are doing with the chartered actuary is rebranding the associate, and they're forcing it to become a scaffolding step. So just to be aware of that, that's the environment. So there could well be, in 6 months' time, a year's time, the chartered actuary out there being the UK equivalent of an insurer, of an associate, of an amassa, yeah.
Okay, but before I wrap, okay, Andrew, I want to go to you, and then Leroy, I actually want to get your perspective as well, so I'm warning you before I put you on the spot.
I've had some engagement with my employer around this. I think in a multi-qualification universe, I think if we can position it and I think do a bit of work with the employers, I think it's probably more important that we talk and market the different qualifications appropriately than maybe spend too much time trying to come up with the perfect names, especially because we've got names for them.
Yeah.
So I think it is understandable. I mean, I think what I've used, and I think certainly my employer quite liked it, I think are the sort of analogies with the medical profession, where you talk about your fellow as your specialist doctor, your associate as your GP, and then your other ones as various types of paramedicals. And might be a different view about the CAA, but it's obviously a bit
first aid at level one.
I think a multi-qualification universe is where the profession globally is emerging. You know, if you think about countries like Germany talking around going at least associate fellows, so I think we'll see that direction globally in the actual profession. I think it's consistent with other professions. I think it's something we do need to accept and market and make sure that we position the ones appropriately. I think, you know, I've talked about CAA versus TAS. I think the one immediate thing where I think TAS is a lot more appealing, I think this is probably going to be across a lot of Africa, is that CAA is effectively a dead end, because you actually have to, if you want to become an actuary, you know, you do well at CAA, you actually have to restudy everything. There's no credits moving from CAA to TASA, because the subjects are done at a lower level, where at least TASA, you've got the option to continue. You know, you've got the credits as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite an important positioning as well. And it may be some people CAA is appropriate for, but I think a lot of people that I've dealt with is sort of ambition to go as far as possible. And I think TASA will be an easier grounding than that. A more substantive grounding than that.
Yeah, so I think I hear what you're saying is that perhaps our action point from here is to be marketing these a lot better, and marketing to the employers, not necessarily to the public. So it's a bit of both. Okay. Because I do want to get your perspective from the students.
Yeah, so I think from a student's point of view, there's an inherent misunderstanding about ESSA, AMASA, and FASA. And that has to change from employers and from qualified FASAs. So that's education problem as well, that I think if we make it compulsory to be a MASA, then it's seen better as a stepping point to there, and if you're actually comfortable being a MASA, you can be a MASA,
yes,
without being judged for being a MASA.
Correct. And the same with TASA. So
yes.
Not a choice.
Which is,
if you've opted out, you
exactly, which is a big problem right now, I think, in understanding the different levels to the designations. And I do believe that that we need to create appropriate analogies, as was mentioned, so that people understand better in terms of it's a specialist or it's a doc, a GP, or, you know, yeah. just that those analogies aren't appropriate right now in the market, and it creates a lot of confusion and judgment from both sides.
Yes. Yeah. So the thought I had, and I'm going to steal all my ideas from my panel later, but the one thing that I like, so but I'm very strongly in support of this idea of the MASA becoming a normal stepping stone where you just get it as you progress through the exams. I think it makes a lot of sense. But what I like about it is it aligns quite nicely with the degree structures as well. So if you do a BCom, so not all universities will have this, but for us, if you did a BCom, your ideal BCom could be a TESA. It's the candidate that finishes with a TESA that's the ideal candidate. And if you do a four-year degree, you should be a MASA except for the one-year experience, which is a kind of a nice way of positioning to our students as well, and to employers. You want the top students. You're looking for the TESAs and the MASAs who are coming out of with those degrees. And how close were you to those? So I think there's a marketing angle on that as well, of kind of positioning
because
the degrees.
That also addresses that point of the confusion. Mm-hmm. Okay, Steve, if you speak really fast.
I'll speak really fast. It's not the TESA, MASA, FASA that I have a problem with, is what we call them. So if we call a fellow actuary and we've got the associate, but maybe for the public we need to have something like a technical actuary, general actuary, and specialist
or
actuary.
That's where it comes. The A is an actuarial specialist. It's not an actuary.
But we need to. Maybe we're going to find that under our feet that it becomes an actuary very quickly. But the point is, if we don't establish that link to what it means, we're going to win the battle inside our traditional employers, but we're not going to win the battle in the broader marketplace.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we have to do our thinking: is what do we link? How do we market what that means and get it out there before the institute and faculty or someone else undermines us again?
Okay, well, on that note, I think that's a very helpful discussion in terms of taking this forward, and also, I guess, in terms of making sure that we are also all on the same page in terms of what the intentions are.